My name is Arun Gupta. I'm a co-founder of The Independent, and The Independent set up the structure and financing for the Occupied Wall Street Journal.
Okay. And just so listeners know, the noise in the background is a General Assembly that's happening in Washington Square Park. How many people do you think are out today?
Oh, it's hard to say, but I would say at least a couple thousand. I mean, it's so dense, and the vantage point, that would be a small estimate, and you have a lot more that are, you know, in Zuccotti Park still. So this is very much a growing movement that has captured the public imagination. And then when you add in all the occupations across the country, I got a report that the march, I believe it was Thursday in Portland, was 6,000 to 10,000 people. Portland's okay, a very politicized city, but that's remarkable.
Right.
And another journalist contacted me about Philadelphia, saying that their planning meeting, which I believe was Wednesday night, had over 1,000 people at it.
Okay.
So, you know, we are really witnessing, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it is truly a historic moment.
And so we're on the 21st day, I think, of the occupation.
22nd.
The 22nd day of the occupation at Liberty Square, or what used to be Zuccotti Park. Is that how?
Well,
it still is, I guess.
Well, the thing is, they renamed it from Liberty Plaza to Zuccotti Park in 2006. So, you know, they're just reviving the original name for it.
On the 22nd day, you've obviously been keeping track of what's been going on and seeing the movement. Before we get into the Occupy Wall Street Journal...
I've been here since day one.
Since day one. Have you been camping out at all? Or
I haven't. I live barely a mile from it, you know, and I keep thinking about it, but a warm bed keeps pulling me back.
Right, right. But I guess so over those 22 days, what have you seen change and grow in the movement?
Well, I'll go through it really quickly. So what was remarkable to me about the first few days was I'd go down there and I would know almost no one. And I would say, that's great, but that's also a problem, right? So it's great because it's obviously drawing from new pools of people. And I started talking to people and realizing almost no one was from New York City. I talked to people from Portland, from California, from Austin, Texas, from Vermont, Connecticut, everywhere but New York City. And the way I describe it, it's the dispossessed. It's people who often have no jobs. They don't even have homes, or they're transient, low income, and youth, often very well educated, but they just don't have a future. They don't see a future in the system. So they responded to the initial call. And to tell you the truth, a lot of them couldn't really articulate why they were there. I've kind of likened to close encounters of the third kind, where they were just drawn. They had to be there by some supernatural force. And that's fine. You know, it was the idea that we need this occupation in the cathedral of global capitalism. It started to change. By the end of the first week, I started to see familiar faces. I'm reasonably well tied into the New York left, so I was starting to see people I knew from community groups, nonprofit organizations, radical party groups, and so that was encouraging. What really changed was the police violence the first weekend. Almost every day, there's an unpermitted march. On September 24th is where we got the infamous video of the police pepper spraying the young women who were just standing on the sidewalk. And that changed everything. The following Monday, you had a lot more media, a lot more protesters starting to come out. At that point, I would go down there and run into dozens of people I knew. But they still tend to be the more active. And it was growing and growing all week. I then put out an open call because I wanted to give it my own little push. And people responded well to that. One factor among hundreds, I think, in terms of growing the movement. So the next weekend, October 1st, on the Saturday, you had another unpermitted march, and that ended with what many people claim was entrapment by the police on the Brooklyn Bridge and the arrest of over 700 protesters. During the second week, you were getting a lot more mainstream media coverage, but it tended to be snarky, snide, dismissive. Then with all these arrest, that's when things really started to change, because now you had attacks on two consecutive weekends. And so going into the third week, it just exploded. I went down there on Monday, October 3rd, and I was told by one of the organizers there have been over 25 television crews down that day. You also, at that point, there was 1,000 to 2,000 people in the park at any point. And actually, the previous week is when you started to have the big name figures coming out. So Michael Moore was already out, Cornel West, Susan Sarandon, and then the third week, then you started to have more of the celebrities. So you had people like Russell Simmons. One day I walked by, and, you know, like 10 yards from me is Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary having a little impromptu sing-along with 100 people surrounding him. Naomi Klein, I'm friends with her. She's contacted me saying she was coming. Joseph Stiglitz came by, and then actually yesterday I heard Jeffrey Sachs, another reporter, told me Jeffrey Sachs was coming by, and I'm like, Jeffrey Sachs, the man responsible for the shock therapy in Bolivia and the Soviet Union? And then while we're talking, literally 1 minute later, he comes by, and I knew exactly what he looked like. So I was just, Jeffrey Sachs? And he's like, yes. And so I just held an impromptu, an exclusive interview with him for 15 minutes, okay, which was kind of interesting. He tried to blame everything on Larry Summers, right, that happened. He didn't do anything bad in the Soviet Union. No. It was all Larry Summers' fault. But in any case, the point is it's really grown dramatically, and you're really starting to see just this mass outpouring. It's become, it's injected itself into the national discussion in a very important way. One person told me, and I think she's right, that even if all it does is, you know, make the plutocrats shake in their boots, make the political class nervous, it has already accomplished a tremendous amount. And it has forced the rest of the country, and particularly the elite, know that they cannot go on with business as usual. That this extreme concentration of wealth and power in the upper 1%, there has to be something done about it. You can't continue to act like austerity is the only solution for a fundamentally, economically, politically, morally bankrupt system. What comes out of this, it's unclear, but I think there's a sense that we have real power, the state is actually on the defensive, and we could really see some positive social change. So it's an incredibly hopeful moment.
That's great. One of the questions I think people have had in Montreal is people are talking about starting an Occupy Montreal. We're seeing the model of the General Assemblies that kind of predates what's happening here back to what's happening in Tunisia and Egypt and Greece and Spain over the summer. And it's spreading. But one of the questions I think is while it'll spread to pockets in different cities, especially here in New York, does it seem like it's spreading outside of the pocket of people? You know, there's a lot of momentum, but is it spreading beyond the people who are involved at Liberty Park and Liberty Plaza, or is it kind of galvanizing other New Yorkers across the city? Or
it's uneven. These things, you know, we have to think about these things in terms of geography, and that to me is one of the fascinating aspects of it. It's kind of the intersection of social movements with geography, because what was done was a space was taken and held. And that liberating of the space liberated people's imagination. It created new possibilities. The taking of the space has actually created the people, right? It is that has allowed us to say there is a 99%. And so, you know, it is something that is spreading out. But to be honest, and we need to really deal with this stuff in real time, and instead of trying to hide it or paper it over. I've interviewed New Yorkers from different neighborhoods in the Bronx, in Washington Heights, in Brooklyn, in Sunset Park. And what these neighborhoods all have in common, they're low income, majority, sometimes overwhelming majority, African American and Latino. All four people I interviewed said no one in their neighborhood is really talking about it. One woman did say from Sunset Park, Brooklyn, but she said they were dismissive. They were just like, it's hippies making noise because that's what they're hearing in the mainstream media. So we cannot just stand here. There has to be a movement that goes out. But what really gets complicated, like some people blame the movement here for not going out. And it's like, you don't understand what this is about. This whole thing was shapeless, and that's what allowed it to succeed, that there was no real demands. The presence itself was a type of demand. Mm-hmm. And that's what allowed everyone to pour their ideas, their anger, their outrage at the system into it. But to talk about organizing anything, I mean, you know, when we started, one of the reasons we started the Occupied Wall Street Journal was after 10 days, I was told the media team hadn't even been able to issue a press release, right? The reason we have these, they have these general assemblies is this is different than the Seattle model. They would have spokes councils and affinity groups because everyone was already coming there with a network of people, with a group of people they knew, they worked with, they trusted. So the spokes councils would have representatives from the affinity group so you could have this kind of direct democracy, and at the same time it was that you're able to have it in such a way that it's not so unwieldy. Here, everyone is coming completely unorganized. Now you are starting to see some organizations that enter it, but the General Assembly is the forum for the unorganized. And so that means that they are very limited in what they can do in terms of movement building, that it's other movements that have to enter it, intersect with it, and then figure out how do we use this moment to mobilize people across the city to truly make it the 99%, not just in slogans, but reality.
Okay. Today, the second issue of the Occupied Wall Street Journal came out. You mentioned that that it was in response a bit to no press releases coming out, I guess trying to get a bit more positive media coverage and word out. Could you talk a bit more about how the Occupied Wall Street Journal came about and how it's basically how it's functioning right now?
Sure. So that was one of the things that, you know, they weren't producing any media from within. The other thing was that the media was already representing and, more important, misrepresenting what was going on in Liberty Plaza. So we felt that there needed to be something coming out of it that was presenting the stories, the ideas, people's hopes, dreams, and all that. But it was deliberately set up such it's not the official media. There is no official media of Occupy Wall Street. It was actually set up more along the affinity group model, where it was a group of seasoned journalists who came together. And there were dozens of people who made the first issue happen. The common tie is, though, everyone had a connection to the Independent because we essentially went out and mobilized it. The Independent has been publishing in New York for 11 years. This is exactly what we do in moments of great political upsurge, historical moments, we produce special issues. But we felt in this instant it didn't seem right to do it under the Independent banner. It needed to be coming from the occupation itself. So there was a lot of complex things to negotiate. We first had to negotiate the political process, again, because the Independent has been covering all the protests that have been going on. You know, this just didn't happen by itself. There was a whole series of protests that happened in the spring down at Wall Street. There was a three-week sleep out at City Hall, and some of those organizers have been key organizers in the Occupy Wall Street movement. So we already knew them. We were able to talk to them. How do we do this? Should we do this through the media team? Should we do this through the General Assembly? And it was quickly decided, no, it would be impossible to do. The General Assembly would never agree to it. No one, the media team is not going to agree to giving up $4,000 or $5,000, which is what the first issue costs. It's a lot of money. And no one is going to agree to messaging. Everyone's very sensitive about messaging because of all the controversy over demands. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, we'll... So with a bunch of organizers' blessings, they're like, just do it around it, you know, and that's fine because you can come in and do stuff autonomously. And so it was set up with a Kickstarter campaign that's been a wild success. It's operating autonomously now. There's a really good group of people involved in it. You know, the one thing, I have a lot of other commitments, so I pull back a little. After we helped set it up, I edited the first issue with another experienced editor, this guy who was worked at the Associated Press. And so it's producing, it's doing really beautiful stuff, but I've told them a few times, look, you really need to be doing two issues a week. You know, right now they're on a one issue a week pace, and I think even though it's all volunteer, they could be producing more.
What kind of impact do you think the Occupy Wall Street Journal has been having so far? This morning when it came out, people seemed to already recognized it after the first issue, and we're really quick to pick it up. So what do you think the impact or the reach of it has been?
Oh, the impact has been phenomenal. I mean, it's made it into all the major media, not just in this country, but all over the world. It's been featured in the New York Times, The Observer, USA Today, The Wall Street Journal itself, CBS Evening News, Bloomberg News, on and on and on. All the major media are responding to it because it's a totem. It's an actual existing thing that you can grasp. And because the decision was, is like, look, this is not a learning project to train. And there were, frankly, some people upset in the General Assembly who were like, they felt it should be a learning project to train people in media making. And it's like, that is not the point. The point is to get this information out to the general public. And so we really need to do something highly professional that looks beautiful, that reads well, if it's going to serve the movement. That's what the goal of this publication is.
Right. And so it spread to Washington Square Park today. There's been a lot of talk about after 22 days, maybe what the next step should be, or whether or not there needs to be something else that kind of galvanizes a movement to keep going. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it is actually important that they think about how they're going to grow this movement. And one of the ways, a possibility in terms of growing the movement, is actually to take different space, to expand it out. Like, it shouldn't allow itself to get fixed, in my opinion, down at Zuccotti Park. Of course, it's also expanded across the country, which is great, but the media eye is still very much on New York. There was a protest march of 6,000 to 10,000 in Portland just a couple days ago, which is phenomenal, but it got very little media coverage. L.A., there's a growing occupation movement. It's getting a little media coverage because it's L.A., but the eyes of the world are on New York, so the movement here needs to figure out how it's going to grow, both in terms of the geography around Wall Street that it's able to take, and then grow in terms of the demographics and spatial diffusion around the city itself.
Okay. Are you optimistic about what's going on?
It's an incredibly optimistic moment. No, one can always find 1,000 reasons to be critical, and we need to come to this with critical thinking, with our ideas, but let's also recognize the incredible historical nature of this event, that they have captured the public imagination from the left in a way nothing else has since the alter globalization movement a decade ago.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.